From listener-supported KETOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan or on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, November 1st. I'm your host, Boston Christopher, Gunachish, Hawa, Salamat, for joining the conversation. On today's show, performing arts group Orpheus Project is presenting Byron Shankman in recital this Sunday. We'll preview the City Museum's exclusive and adorable sticker project happening this first Friday, plus their other event happenings. The annual Juno Ski Sale is this Saturday. We'll chat with the Ski Club and Ski Patrol about this important fundraiser. And Haley Reed will be on hand this first Friday at Kindred Post, making pupcakes. What's a pupcake? We'll find out. Those conversations, music, and more coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
Listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Ok Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You're listening to a little bit of Byron Shankman, and he's playing Mozart's Sonata in C Major. Not something you'll be hearing this Sunday when he performs here in Juno, but something similar. He'll be opening with that. And joining me now from Orpheus Project is W. Todd Hunt. Hi, Todd.
Hi.
And on the Zoom, because he's not in Juno yet, is Byron Shankman. Hi, Byron.
Hi. I'm excited to be there in person soon and happy to be there virtually right now.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us. And so first off, I want to talk to you, Todd, about Orpheus Project a little bit. Orpheus Project does all kinds of different things. So you're doing Byron's recital.
Right.
You're doing different things. You're doing something with Joel Bennett about Romeo. And on your website, you have sort of the list of the season. Can you just give us like a little taste of what's coming for the season this year?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to. So our season opener is Byron. And the concert is this coming Sunday at 3. And so that's our season opener. Later in the month, we'll have our Romeo the Wolf children's book comes out. It's actually already in town. So if you twist my arm really hard, you might be able to buy one. But that is by Joel Bennett with illustrations by Lou Isaac. And we're really excited. It's a beautiful book. So that'll be a gallery walk. Not gallery walk. It'll be a gallery walk,
it'll
too,
be a gallery it'll be a public walk, market.
Public market as well,
public
market is what it actually meant. But we might not sell out at public market. So if we do, too bad.
I think you might.
All right. All right. And after that, we've got – so a lot of you out there who follow Orpheus Project know that we were doing the – Rory Stitt Opera Q in February. Well, we have had to cancel that for various reasons, which we're very sad about. But we're switching a little bit and still doing a program at the same time in February 2024 called Conflict and Compassion, Hope for a World in Turmoil. And this is going to be a program basically trying to make sense or help us deal with a lot of the war and atrocities frankly, that are happening in the world, and looking at that from a musical and a dance and a visual arts perspective.
Awesome.
Yeah. And we've got our Continuum concert in April, which is a juxtaposition of early music, like pre-J.S. Bach, so really old stuff, and brand new music, which is always a really interesting
program. Yeah, those are really fun concerts. Yeah.
Like nothing in the middle.
Yeah.
Just the really good stuff. And we'll round off the season with our annual saxophone showcase, which is a saxophone choir playing various things.
That sounds amazing. Yeah, that's going to come in summer, early summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's get to Byron's recital. Mm-hmm. So, what's the difference between a concert and a recital?
I don't know. Good question. Yeah. No, there's probably not one.
There's not one really? Difference, right? There's different.
Well, there's, I don't know.
Anyway.
Like, well, you wouldn't say an orchestra recital.
Right, right. You'd say an orchestra concert. I guess it because it's a solo. Maybe is that why it is like that, Byron? Is it because you're solo?
I guess so. I kind of think of it that way, as a recital being like one or two people, and a concert being more people. But it's probably kind of interchangeable, really.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Byron, you've been here to Juno before.
Yes, I've been there twice. Actually, the last time I was there was right before the beginning of the pandemic. Doing an opera with Orpheus Project, which was an amazing experience. And then we all went home and didn't go anywhere for a few.
Glad we got to do that.
Yeah, we were all at home. And probably is, I mean, some people were, did you have sort of a creative surge during the pandemic, Byron?
Yeah, you know, one thing that happened during the pandemic is that I started doing a lot of online performances. So, like the chamber music series that I direct in Seattle, Sound Salon, started putting whole concerts online on our YouTube channel, and also individual pieces, like the Mozart sonata that you were just playing comes from one of our online concerts.
I see. Okay. So how did this specific recital come about? Did you and Todd just have a chat and decide that it was time?
Pretty much. I think it started out when I was doing a tour in South America earlier this year, and I wrote to Todd and said, hey, I'm doing this piano recital program. How about, I'd love to bring it up to Juno. And he said, great, sure. It wasn't possible to do it back to back with when I was going to South America, but we were able to schedule it for now, which works out just perfectly.
Well, that's fantastic. And where do you reside at, Byron?
I live in Seattle.
Seattle. Okay. Awesome. Yeah. So our sister city down there in Seattle. Easy flight up then, just a couple hours. Hop off the plane. Yep. Yeah, that would be so great. And so what can we expect to hear this Sunday?
Well, I always like to do a variety of music that includes some things that are kind of famous pieces from the so-called canon. So I'm starting with a sonata by Mozart and ending with some pieces by Franz Schubert. And then I always like to juxtapose them with things that people might not have heard or even heard of. A couple contemporaries of Mozart, Marie-Emmanuelle Bayonne and Joseph Bologna. And then a later romantic composer, a Russian-Jewish composer, Yoel Engel. And there's so much wonderful music out there that just kind of got left out of the history books because it didn't fit the narrative of what a great composer should be.
Mm.
So I enjoy exploring that music and finding the real gems that have been unfortunately neglected. And then, you know, I think of a concert as really, or a recital, whichever one you want to call it, as really just an opportunity to bring people together, you know, to be together in community and share an experience that's hopefully uplifting in some way and joyful. And I mean, to sit in a room with a group of people and share a common experience, a cultural experience, we don't get to do that very much in our everyday lives.
Yeah, especially post-pandemic. And I love the program that you've chosen. It seems like it's the classical version of bringing sexy back, right? Sort of, you know, kind of playing some cool tunes that maybe some folks haven't heard before in a recital or in a concert or in an orchestra. And so that's nice because, I mean, you are going to play some Mozart, but then you're going to play some things that maybe people aren't as familiar with. I think that's really great. Yeah. Todd, where is the concert going to be?
So it is going to be at Kunehidi Northern Light United Church this Sunday at 3 p.m. Tickets are available on our website, orpheusproject.org. That's O-R-P-H-E-U-S project.org.
Look at you, marketing master, spelling it out. I love it. No, you got to.
I gotta do that all the time.
And also, I mean, that church is an amazing space for sound, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, it's one of my favorite performing spaces in town, especially for smaller groups like this. It's got a really nice piano and such a warm sound in the room.
Yeah, Byron, have you performed there before at the church?
Yeah, actually, a few years back, I did a recital with a violinist there, and it is wonderful acoustics, and it's also just nice to be that close to the audience and to be able to connect with the audience in that way as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm assuming, you know, that they have the instrument that you'll be using, right? Like, they have the piano there, so it's... Sometimes you don't know what you're going to get with that, right? I mean, when you travel around, Byron, are you wondering what kind of piano or keyboard they might be providing you?
Yeah, it can be quite an adventure. not always in a good way, but sometimes in a great way. So it's nice to know that I remember it being a piano that I really enjoyed playing. And so that makes me all the more happy to be preparing for this.
Do you have any, this would be fun, do you have any fun, so sort of good surprising story about when you show up to play somewhere and you didn't know what to expect and it was actually something that was a wonderful warm surprise?
Wonderful warm surprise. Gosh, I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Okay. Is there a nightmare scenario one?
way too many of those. But you're inspiring me because I think, you know, it's easier for us to remember the negative stories. And I think,
that's why I asked about the warm one, because it is always easier to remember like the troubling times. But then, you know, we have to be grateful for the times where we're pleasantly surprised, right? I mean, that's kind of cool. Yeah.
Actually, I can tell you an example of that from my trip to Chile a few months ago, because one of the places where I was playing, I play harpsichord as well as piano, and one of the places I was playing, they wanted me to do part of the program on harpsichord and part of the program on piano, and I contacted a harpsichordist colleague of mine who had been there before, and she said, oh, that she had had a really bad experience that she had spent days trying to get the harpsichord to work. And I thought, well, I'm only going to be there for a day. So I thought, well, okay, at least I'm doing part of the program on harpsichord and part on piano. So if it's really bad, I can just say, sorry, I need to do it all on the piano. And it was actually a perfectly decent harpsichord. It was a beautiful, beautiful concert hall. And so I was having really low expectations, and it was a very nice, pleasant surprise.
That's awesome. Well, I'm really happy that you were able to join us on Zoom for a couple of minutes. It's Byron Shankman in recital this Sunday. Todd, give us the details and the website one more time.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is this Sunday at 3 p.m. at Kunehidi Northern Light United Church. Don't forget, there's a time change. You'll set your clocks
on
back
Sunday.
That day. So if you've got one of those old-fashioned clocks that don't change for you, you'll have to keep that in mind. Tickets available on our website at orpheusproject.org.
And absolutely. And if you want to know more about Byron's music, the website is byronshankman.com. It's byronshenkman. Gunath Cheesh, for you both being here today. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Boston.
Pleasure to meet you, Byron.
Thanks, Boston.
Up next, the City Museum is having an exclusive sticker event this First Friday. We'll find out all here next on Juno Afternoon from KTOO. support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Clene Di have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot, once part of the Tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these Tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. We'd like to take a moment and say thank you to the individuals who helped us craft our daily land acknowledgement. Gwyneth Cheesh to Vera Starbart, who planted the idea of making it super place specific and guided us on pronunciation. Lillian Petershore, who created so much of the beautiful structure. Ishmael Hope, who gave us additional ideas, and Ernestine Hayes, Bob Sam, and Fran Houston, who gave important feedback. We are grateful to all those offering guidance as we grow as an organization. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The City Museum recently commissioned three local artists to design history-themed stickers for their museum store, and they are adorable. Here to tell us all about that and other exciting happenings at the City Museum is the City Museum's Kate Ross. Hi, Kate.
Hi, Boston.
Here in a different capacity every time you're on the show.
I just can't stay away. You know, there's too much fun stuff happening.
Yeah, but this is your day job. And and so we have to, we love to have you here to talk about the City Museum and everything going on. And I want to get to these stickers first.
Yes.
Because these are things that you commissioned, and you're having an exclusive museum sticker launch this first Friday.
Yes, we are. Yeah. So this is our kind of mini first Friday. We are not changing out our big exhibit just yet. You still have a chance to see Mug a Cuento through November 22nd. But this is our exclusive sticker launch. And these are stickers that you will only be able to find at the City Museum. And so we wanted to reach out to some local artists to get some fun stickers that we could use to give away to kids for educational things, but also sell in our museum store. And they're only going to be $3 each, which is really a steal for local art stickers. So we have three different stickers. One is a sticker of Patsy Ann. That's by Junie Choop. We have a sticker commemorating Romeo the Wolf by Claire Scott. And then we have a really cool sticker that Chloe Kavanaugh of Black and White Raven Co. did that is of the Harnessing the Atom Kutia that Amos Wallace carved in 1967. And that's one of the Kutia that's right outside the City Museum.
Oh, that is so awesome. Yeah, these are wonderfully expressive. Romeo looks great. He's got a rose in his mouth or something like that. And then there's Patsy Ann with the famous dog, like just looking so cute. And of course, the Kutea with the, you know, the little symbol in the background behind that. And it says Juno Douglas City Museum on it. And also shouts out Amos Wallace and the year, which I think is great. These are awesome. And these are going to be, so Friday is going to be when we can first see them and pick them up. But then after that, they'll always be in the store, right?
Yeah, they'll be available in the store. You know, come swing by anytime, grab some for gifts, add a little gift bag, anything like that. Check out the rest of the store while you're at it. We have some really fun stuff. But yeah, we're really excited about these stickers. We wanted to reach out to, you know, not just local artists, but like kind of hyper local, right? People that we wanted to give free rein to do something in their style. So each of these three stickers look totally different. We really said, hey, what's your style? What are you interested in? And then kind of went from there. So yeah, we're really excited. And I have all three already. So
and we're going to shout out those artists once again, Junie Chup, Claire Claire Scott and Chloe Cavanaugh. Mm-hmm. I think that's really great that the museum is always supporting local artists and local endeavors. And again, you mentioned that the Magacuento Filipinos in Juneau is running through November 22nd. Of course, Magacuento was a huge project here done by the KTO news team, and the city, Juneau Douglas City Museum, was a partner in having this awesome exhibit that is has run for all of Filipino American History Month, plus a couple more weeks into the third week of November or so.
Yeah. And just a reminder that through the entire winter, we do have free admission. Each month is donated by different organizations or individuals. For the month of November, the donation for free admission is from the Friends of the Juneau Douglas City Museum. So come by anytime, 10 to 4, Tuesday through Saturday. We will be closed November 10th and 11th in observance of Veterans Day, and then for Thanksgiving, November 23rd and 24th. But besides that, come by anytime in November. Magacuento is up until November 22nd.
That's awesome. And then before we talk about this awesome program for the letters, I just wanted to mention you have the other temporary exhibition inspired by ICE. You want to mention that a little bit?
Yeah, that's our ongoing smaller exhibit that's around what we call our map case room. If you've been to the museum, that's the really cool 3D map that we have of Juneau Douglas. So that's got some paintings and photographs, really cool photography slideshow. And that will be going away soon as well. We don't know the exact date, but we will have something else going up there. So this is your last month or two-ish to see some of those really cool photographs from the Juneau Icefield Research Project and historical photos of the glaciers around the area from, at least 100 years ago.
Wow. That's cool. It's a great time to get over to the museum for that exhibit, the Magacuento exhibit, and of course, to pick up the stickers. And then also, tell me about this Sobolev project, the Writing Letters in Gratitude in Honor of the Late Dr. Walter Sobolev. What's that all about?
Yeah, this is something really, really cool that the City Museum does that I did not know about until this year. And so I'm really trying to spread awareness for it. So November 14th is Dr. Walter Sobolev Day. And so during the entire month of November, the City Museum will provide free note cards, U.S. postage, and an insert honoring the late Dr. Walter Sobolev to any individual interested in writing letters of encouragement and gratitude. So I was not fortunate to know Dr. Sobolev, but he encouraged others with recognition and kindness, and a lot of people remember his frequent handwritten notes and cards. So this is in memory of that, and so we invite community members to send someone a note of encouragement in his honor.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's happening. Is that for the whole month?
That's the entire month. And we have a whole bunch of different note cards to choose from. We have, all sorts of different styles, some that have some Tlingit sayings on them, some from different local artists. So really note cards to fit anybody's style. They each come with a little insert kind of talking about Dr. Walter Sobolev and why we're doing this project for the month. And it's just a really cool way to come swing by, pick up a card, send someone a note of gratitude.
So you can write the card there at the museum, you'll stamp it, and then you'll just send it off?
Yeah, you can even take the card with you, and we'll give you a stamp to take home, and you can write it in your own
time. If you need your own space to think about it a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wow. That is such a great program.
Yeah.
Has that been going on a while?
Yeah, it is. I don't know how many years, but it's been going on for a while, I guess. And I didn't know anything about it. And I think it's just such a cool program. I didn't grow up writing necessarily thank you cards for maybe every birthday present, but I definitely believe in writing thank you cards for, times you really, really feel moved to, as opposed to out of obligation. So I think this is really an opportunity to think about, well, who's someone in your life that could use a little bit of extra encouragement or gratitude or recognition, and be able to come swing by, pick up a note card. And
that's cool. In my life, it has been the transition from handwritten letters. Mm-hmm. I have many from when I was a younger person.
Yeah.
And, back and forth with people, friends who'd gone away and were farther. And I cherish those letters.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now all of that communication is in like email or texts, and it just doesn't feel the same. So this is a great sort of tactile way to get back to you know, at least a little message of encouragement on a note card. I just think that's really special.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I have notes and postcards and cards from opening nights, from theater, from, you know, from other events and people in my life. I have a bunch of those stashed away. And yeah, it's something I try to do for, you know, certain special occasions, or if you might think of someone that really could use that extra little boost. And yeah, something about having it be a tactile, physical thing. It just, it lands a little bit differently than having it like a text or an email. Definitely always say thank you. I'm very big on appreciation and words of appreciation and affirmation. So, you know, those are great as well, but it's kind of nice to take that intentional time and set that intentional time aside to write a handwritten note and send it off to someone.
That is so great. It's the Juneau Douglas City Museum with free admission all month, thanks to the Friends of the City Museum. And you've got the Walter Sobolev letter writing program for the entire month. And we've got the First Friday exclusive stickers from our wonderful local artist this Friday from 4 to 6. And then they'll be in the store after that. The continuing exhibitions, of course, Magaquento and
Inspired by Ice.
Inspired by Ice. Thank you. Yes, absolutely. And then, of course, last thing we should mention is that people should still be thinking about the 12x12 coming up, right?
Absolutely. It's never too early to start planning and working on your 12x12 art piece. Reminder, these can be 12x12x12 as well. You can make it 3D. The exhibition is scheduled for March 1st through April 13th. Entry forms and information are on our website. But yeah, the 2024 theme is stellar. So there's a lot of different ways you could interpret that. So let your imagination go wild. Start brainstorming now. Throw some stuff on a canvas or glue a bunch of stuff together. Whatever you want to do. This is a community art exhibit and a chance to express yourself however you want.
Lots going on at the City Museum. For more information, you can go to juneau.org/museum. Kate Ross, it's always a pleasure to have you come in and tell us about this stuff. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you, Boston.
Gunnath Cheesh. Up next, time to get ready for winter with the annual Juneau Ski Sale, a great fundraiser for some local groups. This is Juneau Afternoon from KTOO Public Media.
Let's have a store party. This is Steve Kosis with the Reed Drake Planetarium. I'm going to talk about twilight. Now, just when the sun sets, if you have a clear horizon over the ocean and the air is still, when the last part of the sun is just going below the ocean horizon, for 1 or 2 seconds, you can see a green flash. Now, it's not that common. I lived on the ocean in San Diego for 14 years, and my office was looking out over the ocean to the west, and I saw the green flash around twice. Now, once the sun sets, we have what's called twilight, where the sun's light is scattered through the sky, and we see a glow, even though the sun itself below the horizon. And twilight is actually defined in 3 different stages. The first stage is civil twilight, when the sun is 0 to 6 degrees above the horizon, and then you can see some of the brighter planets come out. Then when the sun is 6 to 12 degrees above the horizon, we have nautical twilight, when you can see some of the brighter stars. And when the sun is 12 to 18 degrees above the horizon, we have astronomical twilight. And actual darkness isn't defined until the sun is more than 18 degrees below the horizon. So this time of year around Halloween, the darkness starts around 7:30. And also in the months of May, June, July, and August, the sun never gets more than 18 degrees above the horizon. So we don't have darkness as defined astronomically. This is Steve Kosis with the Reed Drake Planetarium. Our schedule shows on our website at reeddrakeplanetarium.org. Thank you.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Every year, for the last 69 years or so, at least, the annual Juno Ski Sale has been happening. It's a great fundraiser for the Juno Ski Patrol and the Juno Ski Club, and it's a great time to find high-quality new or used gear, or maybe even sell the gear you have. Here to get us pumped for it are Tamsin Peoples from Juno Ski Patrol, Virginia Stonkus from the Juno Ski Club, and Kara Johnson from the Juno Ski Club. Gunnath Cheesh for you all being here today. How are you?
Oh, great. Thank you. I'm loving this weather.
Indeed. Absolutely. Well, it is November 1st, and it means that, winter is coming. And that means that the slopes are going to be opening soon, and all kinds of things are going to be happening, and people need to start digging out that winter gear and figuring out what they're going to do, right?
Yeah, that termination dust is starting to creep down those mountains. And like you said, it's a good time to open up that closet, figure out what you want to get rid of, sell to another local here in town, or start looking for the pieces that you need to fill out your quiver and your equipment setup for the season.
So, Tamsin, give us just the basic details of when the sale is and the time and all that good stuff. And just so we have that to start.
Yep. So the main sale is going to be this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Centennial Hall in the main ballroom. And for those folks who are looking to drop some of their stuff off to consign, we're going to start doing that Thursday and Friday. So Thursday from 5 to 8 p.m. and then Friday from 4:30 to 8:30 p.m. And that's so you can bring in your stuff, whether it's skis, snowboarding materials, hats, gloves, helmets, goggles, boots, Nordic gear, clothing, you name it. The only thing we ask is that it's a $5 minimum pricing for each thing, and you get to price all of your items. So you're the one who gets to decide how much you're asking for something. We'll have some of our folks looking at the gear coming in to make sure that it's safe. We don't really want any material that's coming in that's mm-hmm. outdated or unsafe. So we may say, unfortunately, no, we're not going to take that one. And 25% of all the sales goes to both the Juno Ski Patrol and Juno Ski Club.
That's awesome. And Kara, where do they drop this gear off at Centennial as well?
Yes, we will have a whole registration table there. So you can either go to the Juno Ski Sale site and print off the consignment form and fill it out ahead of time and then bring it in and we'll make a photocopy of it. Or you can come there and we'll have duplicate copies. So you fill it out and they get one copy and then the seller gets one copy.
I see. Okay. And Virginia, is the sale like, is it relying on folks to bring in gear?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And a lot of it is, as both Tamsin and Kara had said, if you have gear that you no longer need or you're upgrading yourself or doing whatever, or in the case as a grandmother, I have grandchildren to outfit and they grow. So it's the same sort of a thing where this is it's an excellent opportunity to take gear that they've only had maybe 1 or 2 years and you are now ready to move up to a larger size. So you've got, you're literally, again, just keeping that gear in cycle because you can't use it any longer, but there's another whole younger generation right behind.
Absolutely. Now, you do say, Tamsin, that there'll be some new gear available?
Potentially.
Does that depend on who brings in what? Or how does that work?
Yep. In previous seasons, we have had some buyers, but this year we have no corporate sponsors. So in previous seasons, we've maybe really had some individuals or businesses coming in. But this year, you know, it's very common as someone who I call myself a professional secondhand shopper. I live for thrift shopping, but you'll have people that maybe ordered something and they didn't return it in time for that window. So they still have the tags on them. But so there will be some new gear there potentially. But most of this, again, it's all coming from locals here in town.
I see. Okay. So in years past, maybe a corporate sponsor has donated some things or something like
that. Or had sales from other shops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I gotcha. Okay.
But this year, it's all locals.
Awesome. And of course, if this is going to benefit two great organizations, Kara or Virginia, either one, tell us a little bit about Juno Ski Club, what the ski club is, and what y'all do.
Go ahead.
Sure. I can speak to that. I'm vice president of the Alpine division of the Juno Ski Club. And we are, you know, a club that focuses on helping kids build their independence, build their self-confidence, learn skills and new techniques so that they can tackle those cool challenges on the mountain that they see their friends and their mentors doing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we are super excited this year. We'll be able to host a United States ski and snowboarding official course that is allowing our athletes and athletes from all across Alaska to come to Juneau this year and get experience and points that allow them to compete nationally. We tried to do this last year, but weather prohibited it. So this year it's going to happen. And we've also last year and this year we've hosted the Free Ride Association's big race. Oh, well, competition. It's not a race. And we're like super psyched at how many freestylers we're having here in Juneau. And Juneau Ski Club started off with just alpine originally. So your little ski racers bombing down the mountain.
Yeah.
But we have expanded to include free ride. And free ride is actually becoming almost our largest program because so many kids are coming up on the mountain. They're seeing their friends and other people like doing tricks and doing flips and doing turns, and they want to do that. And so we, the ski club, have invested significant funds to make sure that those kids have the support and staff that they can do those that training safely.
What is free ride?
Free ride is where, do you remember, like, you see like the jumps?
Yeah.
Like the half pipe? Like,
okay.
So you've got the jumps and then they jump off of it and they can do a flip or they can do a 360 or they can like do a spread eagle. And
okay.
So they're doing tricks. They jump off of a ramp, they ski down and then launch off of a ramp and then they do some sort of tricks in the air and then land and then they,
I see.
And then,
okay.
So they get points for the tricks.
As opposed to alpine, which is just sort of going straight down the mountain.
Around your gates.
You go around gates, right. That's true. Yeah.
Go for speed.
Go for speed, right.
The need for speed.
I guess alpine is speed and free ride is more creative.
Exactly. Like
jumping and expression and things like that.
Yeah.
And what are the ages of the folks who are involved in ski club?
They have to be at least 8 years old to start.
Yep, for Mighty Mites.
For Mighty Mites, yeah. And that's the other part, that the distinction between what Eagle Crest itself offers. They just have their snow sports schools, which get kids literally for the first time on their skis and can get them comfortable on the mountain. What Juneau Ski Club tries to do then is take those who want to go the next level. And like from my perspective, having a granddaughter, she made it very clear that I'm just a little slow. So I needed to find some way to give her an opportunity to gain the skills on the mountain where I would feel comfortable letting her go. She would learn the mountain. And Juneau Ski Club has some amazing coaches that basically can take that to the next level. So she gets the confidence to be on the mountain. I get to sleep at night not knowing that she's going to be fine when she's up there. But they just take her to another level where these kids are then really take those skill sets and run with
them. I love that she knew what she wanted. She's like, Grandma, I love you, but I gotta go.
She's got that need for speed.
I got some energy. I gotta get out.
Yep.
And then we'll have ice cream after.
French fries at the lodge.
Mm-hmm. There you go. French fries at the lodge. Perfect. That sounds so good. Okay. And Tamsin, tell us a little bit about Juneau Ski Patrol.
Yep. So Juneau Ski Patrol is a member of the National Ski Patrol Association, which basically works and standardizes patrol safety across the entire country. We have a really high caliber of safety. And these are folks that are going up early in the morning after a big snow dump to trigger avalanches, making sure that no one's going to be taken out by avalanches before we even open. We're putting out the safety signs. We're making sure that the mountain is as safe as possible and fun as possible for everybody. And if something does happen, we're the folks that are going to help get you off the mountain to seek first aid somewhere else. So we'll help stabilize them, get them in a toboggan, give them a fun sled ride down to the aid room. Hopefully just get them, you know, a nice little cold pack of snow for that bumper bruise and send them home. But we're
maybe
the ones
a little hot cocoa.
A little bit. That depends on, you know, how in you are with the patrol crowd, the extra little service there.
And is the Ski Patrol, is that a volunteer organization?
No, there are full-time employees who run the patroller, to call them the full-time or paid patrollers. But there are a number of volunteers like myself. I've been volunteering with Ski Patrol since 2013, I think was when I first began training with them. They cover all of the training here in town, from first aid to learning the mountain. And honestly, the hardest part of the training was trying to remember all of the names, the secret names for things that are not written down anywhere, but are just translated through oral history of, oh, yes, that is puckered starfish. Or buck hunters, and you will not find that on a map, but that it does exist, and we know where it is.
You mean, are you talking about locations on the mountain?
So how we can kind of correlate and connect and describe where someone might be that needs assistance. All these secret names that we have for things. They're not that secret, but they're not written down. It's all oral transmission.
That kind of keeps it kind of, I like that.
It's is fun, like but also challenging.
Yeah, because then they're like, oh yeah, Tamsin, go there. And you're like, whoa, where? Yeah, but now you've been in it for 6 years. Whoa, 2013, you said?
Yeah.
That's 10 years. Yeah. I don't know where my brain is.
And I still need a refresher every year.
That's so great. And so this Juneau Ski Sale, which is at JunoSkiSale.com, I love that you have the website for that, is a fundraiser for both of these groups,
correct?
Right? And I think you mentioned before that 25% of the sales from the commission. So somebody can give their gear, but they're also donating in a way, because they're going to get whatever their price is. They're going to get 75% of that. But then they're also going to know that 25% of that went to these awesome organizations and supporting that as the winter goes along.
Yeah. And this is Juneau Ski Patrol's only fundraiser for the year.
Oh, wow.
Is this. Okay. So this is going to go towards helping us with additional training, potentially some additional equipment, gear that we need for the mountain.
Travel
as well, for getting advanced training for some of our patrollers, you know, with avalanche safety and other workshops as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. And where does what does the ski club do with funds? What do you have to have programs supporting your programs throughout the year, right?
Right. So this goes towards our general funding. And so this is going to cover primarily our coach's salary. That is our biggest expense for the Juneau Ski Club. All of our coaches are paid, and we try to give them a fair, livable wage. And so we have increased the wages for our ski club, which has increased our fundraising needs for
absolutely
the year. And primarily coach's salary.
Gotcha. Well, it's a great program, right? I mean, it's great for you to get the kids involved, get them some lessons, get them, you know, trained up.
Not lessons. It's training.
It
is strictly training. So we do expect that when kids come into the ski club programs, that they know how to ski and that they are pretty comfortable on their skis. But at 8 years old, when our first Mighty Mites start, I mean, they're going to be wobbly, right? And we just work with them and we help them build that confidence. Right. But we are already setting up gates, and that little eight-year-old is going to go through a slalom and a giant slalom.
I see. I'm glad I asked that to get the difference between training and lessons, right?
Yeah.
So that's really important.
Yeah.
And where do people learn more about the ski club?
On our website primarily would be the one. Or the other thing is that's another reason to come to the ski swap is we will have a table there. Ski Patrol will have a table there. Mm-hmm. You can talk with the coaches. They will be there. All of us will be working through as we volunteer for this event too. So anyone you see in a vest can basically answer probably most of the questions that you might have.
This is just more incentive for you to come and chat with us at the ski at the ski sale. And if you're interested in becoming a volunteer ski patroller, I highly recommend it. Again, it's been keeping me around for 10 years. It's a great group of people. The training is all done in-house, which is fantastic. I mean, this is a global, international level training that we can receive here in town from a number of different patrollers. And again, external training as well. If you're interested in that, volunteering, please, again, come to the ski sale. If not, we can you can check out the Eagle Crest website and get a hold of one of the patrollers through there.
No, that's great. And I'll put links to all this on the webpage for this episode. Great. Again, it's the Juneau Ski Sale. It's at JunoSkiSale.com. You can also go to Facebook.com/JunoSkiSale. It's this Saturday, November 4th at Centennial Hall from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. But if you have gear that you want to commission, there's going to be a couple days that you can drop gear off on Thursday from 4 to 8, I think it was,
Thursday will be from 5 to 8 p.m.
There we go.
Friday from 4:30 to 8:30 p.m. And we actually have a third drop off Saturday morning from 7:30 to 9:30 a.m.
The early shift.
Just in case you couldn't quite make it here on the week.
Right? Absolutely. Well, that's so great. Tamsin, Virginia, and Kara, thanks so much for coming in today and telling us a little bit about the Juno ski sale, which is it's time. It's winter. It's here.
Coming.
We're getting ready for the snow and the fun that we're going to have this winter skiing. Thanks so much. Gunath Sheesh.
Thank you.
Up next, a pupcake pop-up from Beaufort's Bakery at Kindred Post's First Friday. This is Juno Afternoon from KTOO.
Step in to the savory moment. Shh. Or as the French say,
chut.
There's a delicious benefit to poaching fish that you don't often hear about. A secret in plain sight. This secret isn't the fact that poaching is a healthier way to prepare salmon, nor is it that poaching yields an extremely moist and tender piece of fish. It is cooked in liquid, after all. It's also not the fact that this technique infuses salmon with flavor, the tang of wine, or the floral woodsy taste of fresh herbs. Speaking of wine, choose a dry white variety for poaching, something that won't overpower the fish. Make a poaching liquid by combining the wine with water, milk, or even cream, onion and celery, aromatics like fresh herbs and peppercorns, and salt. Simmer for 30 minutes, then strain and cool. This is your bouillon, or as the French say,
bouillon.
The starting temperature of your poaching bouillon is critical. It should be cool when you add the salmon and warmed slowly so the fish cooks evenly all the way through. Never let it boil. To ensure the fish ends up tender, the surface of the poaching liquid should merely shiver, or as the French say,
frisson.
When the salmon is done, transfer to a platter and look inside your pot. There is the secret.
Voilà.
It's the poaching liquid left behind. Drizzle this ambrosial nectar over fork mashed potatoes, the salmon, and anything else on your plate. No mere bouillon now. It has undergone a flavor transformation, infused with rich seafood juices from the very fish it so tenderly cooked. Find the full recipe for wine-poached king salmon at savorymoment.org. From the studios of KCAW in Sitka, Alaska, I'm Beth Short-Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
You're listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at KTOO.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Kindred Post offers exciting and often hands-on events for their first Friday. And this Friday is the same, but different. Haley Reed from Beaufort's Bakery will be there with a pupcake pop-up. What's a pupcake? Well, Haley is here to tell us all about it. Gunath Sheesh for being here today. Haley, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Of course. It's a pleasure. What's a pupcake?
A pupcake is a cupcake for dogs.
Okay. That's good to know. Okay, so you have Beaufort's Bakery. Mm-hmm. And tell us a little bit about Beaufort's Bakery. How long have you been around, and what kind of things do you do?
Beaufort's Bakery, I guess in the most official sense, began in late 2021 when my sister actually encouraged me to share the treats that I very so love making for my own animals with the pet-loving community of Juneau. So I got my business license and in 2022 started attending sales like the outdoor markets at the Jack, selling through Salt and Soil. And this fall at one of those sales that I was at, Nami of Kindred Post approached me and asked if I would like to be a vendor for Kindred Post, which has been just a fantastic partnership. I was very happy to have that be, you know, my first brick and mortar location where you can find Beaufort's Bakery products. So yeah, you can find us there now, and I'll be there on Friday for this Pupcake pop-up, which is a thing I've never done before.
It's going to be so cool. So what is the idea for – so because I know First Friday, usually it's like art galleries and it's, you know, people's art and different creative things. But this is also very creative because I think you say that you create artisan dog and cat treats, right?
Yes.
So like it is an art form.
It certainly can be, and I like to think of it as such. I mean, baking in general is an art form.
Yeah, for sure.
The inspiration for Beaufort's Bakery for me really was Beaufort, my dog, who I adopted in 2016 when I was living in Los Angeles. He was quite overweight at the time when the shelter got him and when I adopted him. So it was really important for me to make sure that everything he was eating was, you know, good and healthy and going to, you know, add enrichment to his life and not just be, you know, the quick, cheap option. I did start making homemade treats for him. And that kind of turned into a hobby that's continued. For the pupcakes, I do enjoy baking. So I've, you know, created several recipes that I use with Beaufort's Bakery, three of which will be included this Friday.
So what will happen on Friday? People are going to be able to work hands-on with you a little bit with these?
Yeah, we'll have stations set up. People will get to choose their pupcake flavor. I'll have, you know, dog-safe frosting. You can frost your pupcake. I'll have a selection of toppings. You can top your pupcake however you want. Really just personalizing a way to give your dog a special little treat. That is what you want it to be.
That is so fun. What are the flavors that you have?
For the pupcakes themselves, I have a pumpkin spice, which is pumpkin and turmeric. I have a banana carob and a butternut squash and salmon flavor.
Butternut squash and salmon?
Yep.
Wow. That is amazing. I mean, I'm sure the dogs love these treats. I'm sure Beaufort gets to sample everything ahead
of
time.
Yes, yes. My little pack has since grown. Beaufort has a feline brother, Theoden, and another dog brother, Ori. Ori and Theoden, I got both of them from Juno Animal Rescue here locally after I moved to Juno. So yes, all three of them are very good taste testers and CEOs.
Interesting. That is so good. Yeah. Quality control, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's so fun. So you get to choose your pupcake flavor, pipe it with frosting and maybe add some decorations and then take that on home to your animal.
Absolutely.
So if there's, okay, so here's a question for you. If pupcake is for a pup or a dog, is there a similarly awesomely named treat for a cat?
Usually the way I explain the treats that I make is if your cat will eat it, they can have it. My cat is very picky. Theoden will only eat meat-based products, and even then he's pretty picky. So cats as obligate carnivores in general will enjoy meat-based treats. If your cat will eat a baked good pupcake, by all means, there's nothing in there that's going to hurt them.
Right, right. That's so fun. But you also make things for cats as well, right?
Yeah. Any of the meat-based stuff cats can have. The salmon that I make, I do a freeze-dried salmon treat, which is one of my best sellers and is in stock at Kindred Post. Early on when I was making those treats, I was not as secure in how I stored those prior to packaging, and Theoden did break into the pre-packaged stash and ate 8 gallons of block size bag of them. Yes. So I'm better about that now, but yeah. I take that as a ringing endorsement for him and for other cats.
Absolutely. That's so great. So now you were mentioning when you first got Beaufort that you were trying to figure out the best foods for him to eat. And when you started the bakery, Well, you were making treats, and then you said your sister convinced you to start your own business, which is great. Go, sis. Because we're all now the beneficiaries of that, which is really great. But what is something that somebody might take away from thinking about, you know, not necessarily buying the name brand? Is there something that they should be looking into for like their dog or their cat's main dietary thing besides getting a pupcake, of course, as a treat?
Main diets need to be holistic. That's something people should discuss with their veterinarian to figure out what's right for their animal. For treats, for the stuff that I do, I'm very careful about, no added sugar, no added salt. I'm really just trying to avoid unnecessary ingredients that are often found in treats to, you know, make them taste better to dogs, in the same way that, you know, sugary treats taste good to us or salty snacks taste good to us, but aren't necessarily good for us.
Right.
Dogs don't necessarily need that nuance. They're not surrounded by, you know, excessive sugar and salt in the way that humans are. So keeping it out of their diet is not a big deal for them. And I find they enjoy it all the same.
That's great. And where can we follow you and Beaufort's Bakery?
I'm on Facebook and Instagram at Beaufort's Bakery.
And that's Beaufurs.
Yep.
Bakery. How did you come up with the name Beaufort?
So technically it should be pronounced Boffer.
Boffer.
Yes.
Okay.
I pronounce it Boffer because I like the sound of that better for him. But yes, Boffer is a dwarf from The Hobbit.
Ah.
For those keen listeners, Ori is also named after a dwarf and Theoden is named after the King of Rohan. So I have a theme going.
I see. Okay. Big Lord of the Rings fan over here.
Indeed.
Absolutely. And Boffer is a name, but Boffer just sounds really good.
It worked more for him.
Yeah. And I don't think he knows the difference, right?
He wouldn't.
But we do. Do people say, wait, is it supposed to be Beaufort?
I don't get many people that actually pick up on or where Boffer. The name comes from.
Okay. Right. That's a deep cut.
A little bit.
Well, Haley, thanks so much for coming in and telling us about this. It's the Pupcake pop-up. I love the alliteration there. We found out what a pupcake is, and it's going to be happening this Friday at Kindred Post for First Friday. That's at 145 South Franken Street, downtown. Haley will be there, and you can decorate your own pupcake and then take it home for your little animal and feed them, which is awesome. So I really appreciate you coming in. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Gunnath Cheesh. That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a wonderful Wednesday. Tomorrow, Culture Rich Conversations will chat about hot topics in Black culture, including revelations from Jada Pinkett Smith's biography. Also, a note, Culture Rich Conversations is now its own podcast. You can subscribe at ktoo.org via the podcast tab or visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon/Culture Rich Conversations. Juno Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road! Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer suggestions or feedback, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Thanks, and have a glorious Juno evening. ¶¶